Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop. With the chicken and the brisket and the marrow and the giblets, Mr. Cutlets, spend some time with me. I know it's crazy, but it's true. It's not worth eating if it lacks the greasy.
Well, hi there. I'm Josh Ozersky, Mr. Cutlets. That was my nom de plume in my early writing career, and I still like to hide behind its magisterial image today. I'm here with my co-host, the silvery-peeled, beautiful Stephanie Cohen.
Hello.
Who is a reporter for one of our top Metro dailies. And we also have a special guest today, Stephanie, somebody I've been trying to get on the show for a long time, one of our most talented and, more importantly, articulate young chefs.
And dapper.
This is John Fraser of Dovetail Restaurant. And in case you have forgotten, Stephanie,
Tell me.
John has 3 stars, count them, 3, from the New York Times.
Wow.
And he did time with various big shots, including Thomas Keller and some of the Froggies, too, if I'm not mistaken, right? Which ones?
The Frog Eaters at Taillevant, Maison Blanche, Arpège.
Well, so there you are. John has a is one, he's like the great white hope of traditional haute cuisine dining. In a way you are, though, because your stuff is... You're coming out of that tradition, but you're really trying to do it unironically. Like, right? Would you say that that is an accurate way of describing your food?
Unironically.
What's ironic food?
Right.
Well, like, for example...
You're talking about being sort of contrived.
Well, I think that a lot of chefs are uncomfortable enough with old-time food that they have to distance themselves from it. So, like... They'll do, I don't know if this exists, but I imagine some chef has done like a deconstructed pot au feu, where each one is like a little gelatin and one is something else. It's a tweezer food, you know. And then, no, they use tweezers. They had a thing in the newspaper about it. They use, I've seen it. I mean, I never realized how preposterous it was.
It's preposterous. What if they served it with tweezers and you had to eat it with tweezers?
You know about the one in, there are restaurants. What? No, there's restaurants where there's like little metal sculptures deliver the food into you.
I know. But those are, that's different.
Well, it's different. Now, John, what? We're talking about a bunch of different things, and sadly, we're only going to have 4 segments today. But
why is that, Josh?
Well, I got caught.
It's your internal clock. It's a little
my biological clock. No, my biological clock is not ticking yet. But the Brooklyn Queens Expressway and its attendant arteries and routes were as clogged as they were as clogged as Abe Vigoda's. Circulatory system.
Is he still alive?
I don't know. Now, Stephanie, I'm trying to talk. I'm one of the great chefs here in New York.
You're the one talking about the clogged arteries in Brooklyn.
It's true. Now, John, one of the things we were talking about in the car was fried chicken.
Yep.
And it's something interesting to me. Stephanie, do you want to go back to the original subject of John's roots in old world cookery, or should we ask?
I do.
About
and what
chicken?
Are some dishes? What are some dishes that he makes that are old world that you that the other chefs have to
yes,
distance
John,
themselves from?
What
like oysters Rockefeller, actually, which I would love to try.
Wait here, I'm giving him a glass of
called
wine.
Called fire brigade. Take it, pass it on.
All right, so let's let him talk for a minute.
Right, good idea. Well, I would first say, though, that, you know, the modern cuisine as it is today, well, first of all, it's an ever-changing thing, cuisine, right? And as it goes along, you have to be trained in what is old to make something new,
okay.
Right? Picasso says you can't paint the abstract unless you can paint what is in front of you, what is real, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to stay within how you were trained or what you know, I don't think it's such a bad thing. But I think that because you're in New York City and because, you know, you basically have to continue to change or people will stop talking about you, to completely forget about you.
Okay.
We're always trying to come up with new ways to serve classic things or the other way around, make classics out of old things.
So. But John, when you're with your stuff, like I see very few, you know, sort of like novel, exotic, freak ingredients.
Hmm.
I mean, the you're in a balancing act anyway, because you got all those Alta Cockers on the Upper West Side that'll get spooked if they see, like, you know, weird things.
Right. I mean, I've never been one to just subscribe to the new ingredient just because it tastes good in the moment and then just continue to search out that crazy Indonesian spice just to be able to throw it in front of people and say, look how smart we are, or how well-read we are, or how well-traveled we are. It just doesn't appeal to me. And so I don't want to do it every day. And as well, on the Upper West Side, there's a certain amount of safety that you have to do, and you have to choose your embellishments wisely, so that they'll be able to understand it.
Well, what's an embellishment that you find is aesthetically pleasing to you and makes something pop the way you want,
right?
But that also doesn't wig them out?
Well, I mean, we use some chemicals and some ingredients that you would find in, you know, in very high molecular cuisine. I know that's a bad word, but
like what?
For the sake of understanding it.
Like what?
You know, a dash of meat glue here, some agar-agar there, you know, carrageenan there. I mean, but these are, we use them in a way that they enhance the product and they don't become the star.
I wonder at what point those things are going to stop call. You know, like, the bag of tricks is not that deep. Those things are all the same versions of different stabilizers,
sure,
or stickies.
I mean, in the case of the meat, cornstarch at one point in the culinary landscape was an incredible thing. Wait, you mean to tell me I can mix this with water and dump it in a sauce and it becomes thick? Magical.
You know, it is magical. Why doesn't anyone do that anymore?
Well,
Chinese do it.
Yeah, the slurry mouthfeel, it covers flavor, and
right,
a lot of the current things that we would put in, actually, they don't take anything away or add. They keep it the same.
Well, you may find
the cornstarch masks the flavor.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
The cornstarch masks it. You know, Steffi, what it's like is, I had this argument with Eddie Glasses when you were away.
Uh-huh.
If you send out to the Chinaman for like sweet and sour pork.
It's MSG, or, right?
No. It's that. It has that too.
Uh-huh.
But that's good. We like MSG. This stuff is like that thick gummy sauce. Like, it could be pork, chicken, duck. You don't even know without that thick, sticky sauce that sticks to it.
I love that sticky sauce.
Well, everyone loves it because it covers up crappy meat. But Eddie says that's the idea of Chinese food. They want things, the meat isn't...
Well, that's the idea of all you know, sort of peasant food. That's what Jews
no,
do.
No, it's not. It's not, yes, what it Italian, is. It's not what Italians do. In Italian food, things taste like itself.
Well, what do you think cholent and all that weird, like, you know... Like Eastern European.
Well, cholent has no flavor. As far as I know, cholent doesn't even have any seasoning.
True.
I mean, it's like something that you would feed an ant farm.
I want to call bull. Can I say?
Yes.
Yeah, on the Italian.
We can curse.
Okay,
on
perfect.
Yeah, say the Italian. Yeah. Fight on the Italian
well,
side.
Well, I mean, the meatball is ground meat with breadcrumbs.
Thank
right?
you.
Define a meatball. I mean, you could
filler.
You could define it. You could define it probably 1,000 ways. And then it's smothered in red stuff.
Thank you.
Right.
Cheap, making stretching. The
I mean,
dollar.
The idea is what's left over. Let's grind it up, throw some breadcrumbs and stuff, and let's put it inside of a stew. That's a meatball.
No, but when they make a chicken, for example, John, they'll what are you doing? Oh, he's giving me the 2 minute sign. When you make a chicken, it turned out. See, there's so much to talk about. See what I'm saying, Stephanie? Like how confused I get and everything. The chicken, John.
I do know that.
They'll make a half a chicken in a pan. They'll make a fish. They'll grill a piece of fish. Like, you don't see them, like, cutting the proteins into a million indistinguishable
little
right-sized
pieces. Well, because
it was
a sunny locale, so they had, you know, produce.
It's sunny
whereas,
in China.
Poland is
they
not.
They don't live under a tree.
I was talking about Italy, but Poland had, you know, potato. I don't know. What do they have in Poland?
I don't know.
I don't either.
John,
what does the Polish eat?
Let me ask you this.
Sausages.
Pierogies.
You had brought up the idea of cornstarch
yeah.
as a neglected ingredient used
no,
to thicken.
No, I didn't say that.
Well, at one time you said it had been.
What I said was there was a magical moment when someone used cornstarch to thicken a sauce, and that was probably thought upon as the same way that, say, someone like Mr. Cutlets would look at the use of xanthan gum or something like that to thicken a sauce, right?
He loves xanthan gum.
No, but she means some self-important epicure in that era would pronounce it unacceptable and beyond the pale. Huh?
You love Guar.
I love that band.
Yeah, I was going to say, what is Guar?
What's the stuff that's in sherbet?
Yeah, Guar gum.
Oh, I love it. You know what I get sometimes? Do you ever get the rainbow sherbet that comes in the plastic thing? And it's got all the bright phosphorescent colors?
Still.
Do you remember one time I had a dinner party? I don't know why everyone doesn't do this. And the dessert was I brought it out with 6 spoons stuck into it.
And you were the only one that ate it from all 6 spoons.
Were you there?
I didn't eat a bite. I was there. I've been there more than once when you've done that. It's like bright green, bright orange, and bright. I don't even know what grocery store you went to. You went to the hot tub time machine.
I know.
To buy it.
Listen, we got to take a break and talk about our sponsor. And we'll do that back on the Mr. Cutlet Show right after this break.
I be your mirror, reflect what you are, in case you don't know. I be the wind, the rain and the sunset, the light on your door, to show that you're home. When you think the night has in your mind, that inside you twisted and unkind, let me stand to show that you are blind. Please put down your hands, 'cause I see you. I find it hard to believe you don't know.
Hi, I'm Josh Ozersky, and welcome back to the Mr. Cutlet Show. I neglected to tell you before that we're at Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, a fantastic, one-of-a-kind restaurant where you're as likely to find great sweetbreads as you are a guanciale calzone or whatever the hell it is you're going to eat here. we also are brought to you by, my favorite grocery store in New York, Fairway.
Not just yours.
You've heard me say, Stephanie, and John, I don't know. Everyone knows that Fairway has like the greatest olive oil program in the world. And if they don't know it, they should. They've also got far and away, what?
No, we have a Fairway on the Upper West Side.
Do you ever get the big Fairway bottles that's like their particular?
I've seen it. I've never bought it.
You don't buy any of the brands that the ones they import themselves.
Right.
It's like Stumptown with coffee. You know what I mean? Like, they go, like, Steve Jenkins goes.
Right.
Anyway, also the best meat tail. I was going to say
meat. That's a new
phrase. Right. I was going to say meat retail. I said meat tail.
I think that's catchy.
Well, they practically deserve to have their own word. John, we're back with you here. John Fraser, who is the chef and a young owner of Dovetail Restaurant, a rare 3-star white tablecloth restaurant that's not by a brand name chef and is not in a hotel, just freestanding restaurant in the neighborhood on the Upper West Side. What was that restaurant before?
It was called Inplo. Greek.
It wasn't any good. It was like you went there and had
we did a huge gut renovation of it.
So this is a block that never supported a restaurant of this caliber before.
No. I mean, the Upper West Side, you could make the argument that they've never really supported a restaurant of any caliber.
No, I would agree with that.
Yeah. West was sort of the premier restaurant. That was like 5 or 6 years ago.
It's the neighborhood of bland dining.
Right. Well, but not anymore.
Not anymore.
Yeah. Well, that's true, but John is limited probably in what he can do.
Because of the bland palates.
If John were just selling to the gastronomes and fine schmeckers, then he would probably
the what Sorry.
to gastronomes and feinschmeckers.
What's a feinschmecker?
A feinschmecker is like a Yiddish is gastronome means like a finicky eater, whatever.
Okay.
You didn't know that?
No, I've never heard.
Well, this is what you get from growing in Winter Park. And look, here's Sietsema. What the hell? There's Bob Sietsema.
I can't believe you actually know where I'm from.
You know,
Pressed.
We're looking at the window. I see Sietsema walking out here. He's wearing a gray sweatshirt and carrying a bag. Probably got a bomb in it or a bong or something. Sietsema just handed A.A. Gill his ass in the paper. I like that. Hello. Hello, Bob. He's taking a picture of me. This will be in the Fork in the Road blog tomorrow, probably. Did you ever read Sietsema? You haven't been here that long, right? In New York.
Right. 6 years. 7 years.
Almost. He was like our Jonathan Gold. He was the guy that eats the horse head soup and everything, you know? Well, you can't get me eating that stuff.
won't eat that?
No.
You would.
You know what?
You would.
I got bit by the good food bug.
Yeah, but for money. Cash. Green.
No, I mean, like...
You do it.
Yeah, but Stephanie, most restaurants, you have to pay them.
Yeah, but if you... Never mind.
There's not much you wouldn't do.
You're saying if I was comped? Is that what you're trying to suggest?
No, I'm saying if you were, like, if you had to do it for work. If you had to eat horse... What is it? What would you have to eat?
You'd have to go to an African restaurant. No, yeah. Well, the thing... Well, Tony, it's harder because he has to pretend to like it. You know, I mean, that's got to be exhausting. John, what about you? How do you feel about the exotic food? Do you ever go to any ethnic restaurants in New York at all? Where do you eat when you eat out?
I mean, most of the time I don't eat out. But when I do, I try and go visit friends, number one, because I'm a terrible friend, because I mostly just work. So right. I like to go and see my friends in their restaurants. My favorite restaurant is down the street from my house. It's an Italian restaurant. It serves thin pizza and farro salad. It's delicious.
Do you not want to say the name of it?
Not really. I don't want everyone else to run there.
Everyone else meaning all seven.
I know what the restaurant it is. I know what restaurant it
Six
is.
Six and a half people.
Mm-hmm. You want me to say what it is?
Go ahead.
Dean's.
No.
There's a restaurant called Dean's that's next to my shrink, and my shrink was on 79th or 78th Street. That's near where you are. Anyway, that's right. It's not your street, but... Boy, those are good. A good red sauce joint. Now, do you want to add something to this?
Well, I mean, I call bullshit on you not eating something for money.
Thank you.
That's the first thing I want to say right now.
I didn't say I wouldn't do it. I'm just saying that I wouldn't.
Aren't you
going to
be doing that very shortly? Maybe.
Well, listen, there's plenty of things are in the works. I can't give any details.
Okay.
Things are happening now that will solve all your problems and answer all your questions. All right?
And is it going to involve you eating a horse head stew, I hope?
No. I'm definitely... Khartoum is going to have the room to himself. But I think that I have to be honest. A lot of chefs and, you know... Chefs are the best eaters are... I don't know. There's a lot of civilians that are great eaters. I know a woman named Jennifer Watson... who sells pacemakers.
She's a good eater.
She is a great eater.
She's world-class.
She sells defibrillators and pacemakers, so her job is to eat out with doctors every night.
Right.
She's probably been to your restaurant.
She has.
Yeah.
Everyone knows her. She is a unique-looking person.
She is cool. I think she's an interesting New York
personality. She takes it very seriously as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you got Plotnicki. There's a lot of people that get around. There are a lot of rich people that eat very well.
Mm-hmm.
Jeffrey Chodorow eats very well. He goes are all over. He just got back from the Basque lands. But where was I? I forget where. How did this call come up, Stephanie?
You said chefs are good eaters or bad eaters.
Yes. So I think that a lot of them like to go to, especially in New York, to enjoy our bounty, our cosmopolitan globalism.
We are a city built on food.
Yeah, I'm a serial over-orderer, you know. I go to a restaurant and I'll have a mid-course and an extra just because I want to see it and taste it. And I never eat all of it and I feel terrible about it and take it home.
I don't think he answered my question, Stephanie.
Which was?
Well, the foreign restaurant, foreign foods.
Oh, we're back to that.
Yeah.
But I don't like, some of them like it, but I would rather see what you're doing or Harold is doing. I'd rather encounter those flavors through you than through their native element. I guess
when you mean ethnic, what do you mean? Like Chinese food?
No.
Like Indian, Ethiopian.
Ethiopian food I do not like.
You can't say blankly. You can't say blankly you don't like like one style of food.
Well, I don't like. I was just talking about this.
She can say it if
I don't like that bread.
Yeah,
that staple, spongy, that weird bread. I'm not into it.
She's talking about Ethiopian food now.
Yeah.
Well, why should she like it, John? I mean,
it's not that I dislike. I just don't really want to go out for Ethiopian food.
No, are you going to go out and pay for a meal? You know, you.
I'm just saying you can't blankly say I don't like one type of food.
You can't. Okay.
It's hard for one to say that because how much have you eaten of it? Seriously.
Twice in my life, two times.
Perfect.
About 18 years ago.
And do you like it?
I mean, there's elements. I had a raw beef tartare that was unbelievable at an Ethiopian restaurant. It was really, really spicy.
So what food, is there any food you don't like?
Not really.
Do you like tripe?
I do, yeah.
You like tripe?
Yeah.
Well, you're asking a chef, of course.
Yeah. I know, but I'm just always curious because like I take pride in liking everything too, except Ethiopian food, apparently.
No, but there's a lot of those things. Like, for example, I went, there's a restaurant called Tandoori Hut.
Yeah.
In Richmond Hill.
Yeah.
Now, I talked to my friend Todd Coleman from Savour Magazine, and Todd is like, I mean, among white people, and he's like the Eddie Schoenfeld of Indian food in terms of knowing so much about Indian food and recipes and cooking and everything. And Todd said, this is the place to eat Punjabi food and especially tandoor, which as a form of meat cookery or, you know, barbecue, whatever, something I wanted to know about. And I was the restaurant critic for Newsday, so I actually had to eat it and write about it. I ate one bite of the first kebab.
Mm-hmm.
Done.
Why?
Done.
Why?
Done because it was so hot.
Oh, you don't like spicy food.
It had an anesthetic effect on my mouth.
You don't like spicy food.
I'm a super taster.
What does that mean?
Tell her what a super taster is.
First of all, are you really one?
I think I am. Tell her what it is.
Well, I'm not sure that that's a technical scientific.
It is. You don't know that. So you don't know.
There's
about
a super a super seer, a super hearer.
Okay, he doesn't
and
know
a super
either. A super taster. Science
I like
has
this
found.
Guy. He takes Josh on.
Science has found, uh-huh. Stephanie.
Okay.
That
science has found.
All the top men in the field will tell
this
you.
This sounds very scientific.
They'll tell you that
what
some
field?
People have more, like how some people are.
Some people have more taste buds.
You shut up. There's an allele
no,
in
no,
our
No, I'm the co-host, so I'm supposed to talk.
All right, but is it okay if I answer your question? Or you know what? Now it's already a break time. You kept me from answering the question. Here's the answer, the quick answer. They're looking at each other like in horror. Maybe I've gotten carried away.
Yeah, because you do make me come out here every Sunday.
Well,
you get
pizza and wine. I'm sorry, honey.
That's
you're
okay,
right.
Sweetie.
I apologize.
That's okay.
Let's take a break
Josh
and come
ornery.
Back and, on the Mr. Cutlets Show.
Picking up the pieces of my sweet shattered dream. I wonder how the old folks are tonight. Her name was Anne, and I'll be damned if I recall her face. She left me now knowing what to do. Carefree highway, let me slip away on you. Carefree highway, you've seen better days. The morning after blues, from my head down to my shoes. Carefree highway, slip away.
Hi, I'm Josh Ozersky, and I'm here at...
Just got a spanking.
I'm here at the Heritage Radio Network, sponsored by Fairway Market, of the great olive oil and meat programs. And we're here at Roberta's, and we have my beautiful co-host Stephanie Cohen and John Fraser, the chef from Dovetail. Steffi pointed out that I got a little too aggro at the end there. This is a word apparently that the young people use today, aggro.
No.
But it's true. I got out
you
of
just
bounds.
Called you young. Come on.
Oh yeah.
I got out of line and you had to straighten me out. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Josh.
I really am.
I
apologize. That's
I appreciate undignified. Will you answer what a super taster is?
Yes, science has found that there's a gene that is turned on in some people that causes in embryological development there to be like extra taste buds and so forth. So like they taste things differently than other people. It's one of those like alleles, like you can either make your tongue in a little circle or you can't.
Well, Does it mean you have more taste buds?
Yes.
Yeah, Are you sure about that? There's more taste buds? Because my guess would be that the taste buds are more active.
No, I think there's more of them. It's like a mutation. It's a mutant.
But how do you know that you have that?
I don't. But I can't eat hot things. They make my mouth hurt. That means I must be a super taster.
Where'd you come up with that? Corollary. All right. We'll accept it.
It only stands to reason. Mm-hmm. It's the theory of personal aggrandizement.
Mm-hmm. We know. We're familiar with that.
Well, one thing we were talking about in the car, John, were we in the midst of... Oh, I don't think we were. I don't think we were. We had about exhausted the ethnic eats thing. But we had talked about, John, I think the thing now is chefs like to do low things well.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Shake Shack made the hamburger in a fine dining frame of mind, and the sambar made...
No, expound on how a Shake Shack burger is in a fine dining frame of mind.
Well, here, I'll tell you how. This is a question that I can answer. In a hamburger restaurant, like, everything is geared to vast economies of scale, mm-hmm. and problems of efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So to get, like, for example, a tomato, if you look at the tomato on the Shake Shack burger, and it's true of all the other good burgers too, like Bill's has it and the Joey and Stand and all the good burgers now. Five Napkin Burger. It's the same cherry tomato that you would get in Gramercy's Tavern in a salad. The lettuce is the same lettuce you would get, like in the piece of lettuce that you would get in a Union Square cafe salad. The meat is like ground for them by Pat. Like they were really the first ones that got on board with that whole program. I mean, the way that they approach their standards of service, the temperature, keeping temps and everything.
I really need to jump in here and say this.
Please.
So what you're saying is because it's well sourced and good, it's suddenly a fine dining frame of mind. And what I would just say is that the bar for good food has been lowered so far down by, as you say, economies
That's
of scale
true.
And everything else. When you start throwing around the word fine dining as it applies to casual restaurants,
lettuce.
Because it's good lettuce and it's well-sourced, let's just say that that's how it always should be, well-sourced, good food. And then let's say that fine dining is a step above that.
It's five steps above it.
Well, having said that, Shake Shack is my next-door neighbor.
Right.
Right? And they're awesome. I mean, there's nothing about, not even, I mean, we share the same backyard. Let's just say that. They run their businesses with so much care. They take really good care of their employees. I mean, everything about what they do is something that we can all aspire to as business people, all right? But I'm just not sure that when you start throwing around the word it's fine dining,
tomato.
I mean, fine dining means something like, you know, a little...
Well, I guess what I'm... You're right. Maybe I'm being a little bit too loose with the term, but what I mean to say is that the way that they... approach that restaurant in terms of like sourcing and a lot of other cooking,
right.
and keeping stuff and ordering stuff and paying for the products that they pay for.
Well, they've hit the reset button, basically. They've said that this is how it always should have been.
Right, but they do it like it's more like a restaurant than a QSR fast food thing.
I absolutely agree.
And that was when the noodle bar, like, look how much better the Momofuku soup noodles was. That bowl of noodles with its pork belly and everything else,
right.
like, was much better, much closer to what you would get in a like, you know, they made a real stock and so forth.
Of course.
So I don't know, whatever. Where, but that was.
I agree with that. I agree that there's just so much Sysco around. Was it Sysco is the problem?
Sysco. Well, in fast food, it's the problem. I mean, in places that are like.
But not even in fast food. I mean, just in. Tomatoes are disgusting. Well, I know there's been a problem with tomatoes this year, but they're terrible this year. I don't know. Everything should be
well,
a,
they shouldn't
a standard
be eaten
of,
right now, just so you know, because it's wintertime, right? We
I
should
want
wait till summertime
my produce
to have
when I want it.
Right. Well, that's yeah.
Okay, I want bananas and guava, mango, and coconut for dinner.
Well, I don't know. I don't like a tomato at all on a hamburger. But why would you want that? What?
Really?
No, it's disgusting.
Why is it?
Well, why don't you just pour a shot glass of water on your hamburger then? Like, why would you want something? If you eat it by itself, it's cold, whatever. But to just have it as a bunch of mush, like cold, wet mush on something.
Well, if you define the tomatoes, sorry to interrupt, but if you define the tomato's place in terms of palate on the tomato, it acts as acid, right?
I
can have a pickle
guy.
For that.
He well, can take yeah, sure. Josh down.
Sure,
it's true. Well, and I need taking down. John, let me ask you another question. We were talking about this on the way over here.
What's about to happen over there?
I was going to do some sound effects, but this doesn't work.
Oh, thank God.
I was going to do a cricket on a tumbleweed. I just stole that from Zach Galifianakis, whatever the hell his name is.
Galifianakis.
Thank you.
He's brilliant.
Love, John.
I was going to ask him, you know what, it really isn't that interesting a question. I was going to ask him about fried chicken, because, you know, I'm writing this book about the Colonel now.
Oh, I didn't know there was a book attached to the...
No, that's what this is all about. I'm writing a book. I'm going to go to Kentucky. I'm going to look in at the actual sacred scroll, you know, and everything. Like, and it makes me so hungry for chicken. When you
I need
read
to see
about
you
this.
In a Colonel Sanders outfit, by the way. White suit.
I want... That's what I was...
The boat. It has to happen.
You know, it's hard because a lot of outfits you can't wear glasses with. Like, if you want to...
Oh.
If you want to dress up as, like, Leatherman, Tom of Finland Leatherman, or any of the various things, like...
For instance...
Dr. Evil, whatever. Like, you can't wear glasses.
You have to grow out the goatee as well. You have to bring it. If you're gonna do it, you got to go all the way.
You know, he.
Yes.
He only wore the suit. He wore the suit in public. He never went out in public when he wasn't wearing the suit. Right. Like, that's all he wore. Every day he got up and he put on the suit. You know, a lot of interesting stuff about the Colonel. But the Colonel reinvented fried chicken.
Was he an actual Colonel?
Yes, he was a Kentucky Colonel, Governor Rudy LaFoon. Gave the colonel his honorary colonelhood in 1935. Before he was even really like a fried chicken guy, it was just like he was like some guy.
Does KFC still stand for Kentucky Fried Chicken, or is it just KFC now?
They tried to trick people into saying that it was now Kitchen Fresh Chicken.
Right, right.
But we all know that it's Kentucky Fried
steeped
Chicken.
Steeped in what? American
idiot.
History.
Like, can you just imagine that boardroom when that conversation was happening?
All too easily. All too easily. All right, let's take a little break, and we'll come back for one last segment on The Mr. Cutlet Show.
Doesn't pay to try. All the smart boys know why. It doesn't mean I didn't try. I just never know why. Feels so cold and all alone. Baby, you're not at home. And when I'm on, big deal, I'm still alone. Feels so restless, I am. Beat my head against a pole. Try to knock some sense down in my bone. And even now they don't yell. The scars are so old. And when they go, they let you know.
All right, hi, I'm Josh Ozersky, a.k.a. Mr. Cutlets, and thanks for sticking with us. I probably should have mentioned by now that we actually have a number had you wanted to call in. It's 718-497-2128. And I'm more than happy to listen to you tell me to shut up and let John Fraser talk more. We're here with Fraser, the aforementioned chef from Dovetail in the Upper West Side. Where's your restaurant?
77th in Columbus.
And it's DovetailNYC.com?
Yeah.
And John, how would you characterize Dovetail? We've been talking about it as if everybody knows all about it.
Yeah, but, tell me about it. I don't know anything about it.
Right. It's a.
They were laughing because my headphones was off.
Yeah. It's a modern fine dining restaurant. I mean, I think that it takes itself very seriously, but it doesn't try and push that onto the customer. And we have a lot of really great cooks and front of the house staff. And you know, we recently renovated in November, That was crust hitting a pan, in case you're wondering. we just recently renovated and added like 25 seats and a bar and stuff, and the place is really it's taken a turn into another place for me. And I mean it was a really great restaurant, and now it has it's wearing the correct clothes, and I'm really into it.
How old are you?
34.
You're young to own your own restaurant. Or are you not?
Three-star.
I don't know.
That's amazing. Just own his own.
I don't know.
That's
He's
so
the
cool.
chef of a three-star restaurant.
Chef owner.
Yeah.
That's great.
Thanks.
But John's food is neither strictly... What's most interesting to me in a lot of ways is the things that isn't. Like, it's one of the few restaurants of that caliber that doesn't have like a notable Italian orientation, nor is there much... in the way of Asian ingredients. Mm-hmm. And those are kind of like, in a lot of ways, the lingua franca for a lot of ambitious young chefs these days. John is a guy, I mean, typically what are a couple of your dishes? I mean, like your halibut,
right.
Your
veal. No, I mean, I think the genre is called Creative American, right? I mean, but it's used so often, it's almost a bad word now. I mean, or New American or whatever you might say, but I mean, we do the right thing. We well source our ingredients. We take them really seriously, and we treat them with care. I mean, some of the things that, I mean, you've written about is like the, you know, lamb's tongue muffalata and sirloin with beef cheek lasagna.
Oh, that's
like that,
delicious.
Right. And I mean, the main thing is we just try and coax as much flavor out of whatever, you know, whatever the season calls. So mostly we respond. We respond to nature as opposed to try and.
So you don't have any tomatoes on the menu right now?
No,
I take
not at all.
But I think all that right. your what's good about your restaurant transcends the virtues of seasonality, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. I mean, every guy talks about that, you know,
as they should.
I mean, let's talk about your cornbread. Like John gives you like this little loaf of cornbread. That cornbread is better than. That's why I started talking to him on the way over about fried chicken. Was any man that could make that cornbread that's. It's true to cornbread, but it's like better. Like that's what this whole thing I've been trying to get at in the stumbling way has been about the Shake Shack and so forth is like to do things and not just do them different. Like people say, oh, like I'm going to make a hamburger, but I'm going to do it in a, you know, in the bag or whatever the hell. Like, no, like make it like the thing that everybody likes, but just find a way to make it better. Like, so his cornbread is like richer and saltier and denser. And it's just,
but it tastes like itself, just a better version of itself.
Right, it's like cornbread, but if cornbread was better. And then I think that's approach to, like, what's something else like that? What's something else like that that you do in the restaurant?
I mean, and that's probably, I should put that on my website, tastes like itself, only better. I mean, that's exactly, no, I mean, I don't, maybe we could add a, you know, a period and a comma, but it's exactly what we're trying to do is try and coax whatever naturally is there and make it as good as it possibly can be. And you know, when you get into restaurants that serve, you know, a shitload of covers or something like that, every time a little bit is lost, you know? And one of the reasons you love Shake Shack is because they take every hamburger that seriously.
Right. That's right. And then also, but the thing is, like, people sometimes, they translate it in their head that letting something be itself or whatever means, like, under-seasoning it or under-manipulating
it. Right.
Like, the Shake Shack burger is a very manipulated object.
Of course.
They salt the fuck of it, out of it. And they press
butter.
They butter, they smush it.
Right.
Now, what's an example of something that you do where it's a dish where, like, a lot of effort goes into it that you don't necessarily see in the form of conspicuous ingredients, painterly brunoise, et cetera, et cetera?
I mean, there's rarely a dish on the menu that doesn't have that kind of attention to
detail.
What's
one that you're pleased with now that's on the menu?
In this moment. I think probably the simplest dish we have on the menu right now is the halibut, which is it's poached in extra virgin olive oil. The halibut comes from you know, probably within 500 miles of where we're sitting right now. It's very, very local. It's with broccoli puree, truffle beurre blanc, right? Truffles, they're in the sort of the end of their season. It looks delicious.
No, I'm sorry.
Good. I'm good. Just watching you drink it. Looks delicious.
I didn't get it. It's like in Witness when Harrison Ford drinks all the lemonade.
Parsley, broccoli, and gnocchi. I mean, it can't be any simpler than that. But the point is that every one of those ingredients is so well looked after, and in looking after them really well and trying to express how simple they are, it's actually very laborious.
How do you, have you ever figured out how many hours it takes to make one of your dishes, or how many men are involved? Like, yeah, how many labor hours? We hire
women also, just so you know.
How many cooks does it take to produce?
Yeah.
Like a good dinner at Dovetail.
Every service we have 2, 4.
But they were working 8. All day and the day before doing prep.
No, right.
9.
Well, he's going to include all the prep cooks.
We actually don't really have prep cooks. The people, one of the advantages that we have is that the people that are cooking the meal actually prepped all of the stuff. So there's not a guy in the morning who cleans all the broccoli and hands it off to someone at 4 o'clock,
right,
and that person cooks them.
The guy that makes it, he's there for 8 hours.
Oh, 8?
Or how long? 12?
At least.
I just think it'd be interesting to know how many hours go into one meal.
Right.
Man hours.
Well, yeah. We have typically 12 people cooking every service at Dovetail. That includes me.
Why do they cook their own stuff? Is because you don't want to pay somebody?
No. It has nothing to do with that. Actually, it's because I want to produce cooks. So I don't want cooks who walk in and get a vegetable that's already prepared for them and they put it in a pan and saute it. I want to produce people who know. Like, if you're the fish cook at Dovetail, you butcher all your own fish.
That's how it should be.
That's how it used to be. Yeah, the fish comes in whole, and you have to butcher it and break it down, and you also cook the same fish. So there's a sense of responsibility, mm-hmm, as well, right? Mm-hmm. There's no chain of. It was his.
Do they make their own sauces too?
Everyone makes every. Yeah, if you're the meat cook, you make all your own sauces.
So there's nobody doing the sauce. Like, if you're the meat cook, you make your own sauces.
Yep.
And then there's a regular stations. There's a fish man. There's a meat man. A salad man, and so forth.
Right. Garmage, hot apps, fish, meat, and then there's each of those people has one person underneath them who cooks their vegetables. Right. So there's fish and fish vegetables, meat and meat vegetable.
Garmage,
hot apps, 2 pastry, 1 canapé. Sous chef.
Meat. You have somebody dedicated just doing canapés, yeah, and amuse-bouches and,
yep,
so forth?
Yep.
I got to eat there.
And those you things should. Are all... That's the thing you don't realize. Like, that's what I'm talking about. Like, that little thing that they hand you, like, that... Somebody made that, like, a minute before then. Like, at Anthos...
I love canapés.
One thing that they do very well at Anthos is the the Greek crudies, you know?
Right, yeah, yeah.
And each one's got a million different things, like 5 or 6 different ingredients, dehydrated, whatever. And I figure the guys would make them up and stick them in the refrigerator. That's what I would do. But they know they make each one to order.
Put 6 plastic spoons in it.
Yeah, put 6 plastic spoons in it. Now that is a true, that's why fine dining deserves to be called fine dining. And not a hamburger deserves to be called fine dining.
Exactly. Because if a hamburger is fine dining, then what is that called? That's called super fine.
For super tasters.
Right.
Super tasters. They told me that the top men in the field told me.
Top men, Steffi. John, I know that you are not only you set a good example, but you're friends with a lot of the young chefs today. Mm,
yeah.
And there's a kind of a generational cohort of you. I wonder if you could call out some of the other chefs that you think people should keep an eye out for that may not be as established or famous or whatever, chefs in their early 30s.
Right. I thought you brought me here to talk about me.
Yeah, that wasn't in his contract,
what
Josh.
What is going
He's
on
He's going to storm
here.
Out of here.
What's going on? You know, there's a huge opening I'm really excited for. Corey Lee from the French Laundry. He was the chef of the French Laundry. He's going to open his restaurant in San Francisco. I'm really excited to see how that all comes. It's called, he hasn't released the name yet, so maybe I won't. But it's going to be one of the restaurants of the year. He's an incredibly conscious and smart guy, and he brings the thunder. I'm really excited about it. But in New York City, you know, I just had dinner in Café Bleu.
Right.
With Gavin.
Right. Terrific cook.
That's so good.
Blew my fucking mind.
You and
it
him.
It was so good.
The two of you are cut from the same cloth. The two, both of you are like, And who else?
I mean, you know, and my drinking buddies, you know, the Marcos and the you know, the Heralds of all the same. You know, we all come from this. We all have our own pedigree, our own set of junk in our past, and we're all trying to use our point of view to express something. You know.
For the record, John means Marco Canoro of Hearth and Harold Dieterle of Perilla. Stephanie, unfortunately, we've gone over, and
the lovely counter,
Kathy Irway is waiting to get in. Seatsum is quivering in front of a fire outside. Is there anything you want to ask or say?
What do all the young chefs talk about when they get together? Girls?
Most of them are married.
Mm.
Yeah. So yes, definitely girls.
Okay, perfect.
All right.
Done.
Thanks for listening. Eat it Fairway. Eat it Dovetail.
Thanks for having me, Josh.
And thank you for being here and putting up with it all. And you too, Steffi, especially. I'm Josh Ozersky, and this is the Mr. Cutlets Show.
Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop.